Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Deborah Bird. You usually know when you're living beyond your means, the bills pile up, your credit cards are maxed out, and you run into debt. Basically, you can't sustain your way of life, and you know you have to make a change. Matthijs Valkernagel says the same thing is happening in nature. We have only one planet, and we want to live the best lives we can, but we're already overspending our resources. Valkernagel created the ecological footprint concept as part of his doctoral dissertation with William Rees. He said at that time there were no tools to understand how our consumption is linked to the ecosystems that support us. But now there are tools. He spoke with Earth and Sky's Lindsay Patterson.
So very simply we asked how much ecologically productive area, how much forest area, cropland, etc. is necessary to support my life, for example. So what's my personal farm? Which is not just one contiguous piece of land, obviously, like a real farm, but it's bits of land all across the world, a little bit of a few square feet of land for coffee from Guatemala, perhaps, and some square feet of cropland for potatoes in, let's say, Iowa, I don't know. So it's a patchwork of areas that support me for my lifestyle across the world, and we try to develop a counting system that can capture that for individuals, cities, nations, and for the world as a whole.
So what it is a quiz, essentially, or is there more than that?
It's an accounting approach, and it can be applied at all levels. The most perhaps rigorous, detailed analysis we have at this point is at the national level, because we have pretty complete data sets on each nation's production of agricultural products and forest products and fisheries, etc., and can then, through also adjusting them through trade statistics, find out how much is being consumed in net terms in each country. So, for example, if you look at potatoes, how many potatoes are grown in the United States, how many are exported, how many are imported, and then know how many disappear in the United States. So we can do pretty clear balances for each nation, how much is being consumed in a particular country, and then compare it to how much is being regenerated globally, all these different categories, and then make a balance sheet and say how many Americas would it take to support the current American consumption, or how many planets would it take if everybody lives like an average American, for example. So that's kind of the comparison that becomes available. Now, to make it more accessible to people, we started to develop more individual quizzes, and one of them is on the Earth Day website, where you can, through a pretty perhaps a little slightly simplistic analysis, about 15 questions, assess just roughly where are you at with your consumption lifestyle. Obviously, we make many more choices in our lives than just 15, so it's a crude first estimate to find out how many planets would it take if everybody lives like you.
So where does the data come from?
Essentially, the United Nations invites all the nations to provide the statistics, and then they are presented in a common format through organizations like the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization or the International Energy Agency, etc. So that's the data set that we use.
What kind of feedback are you getting when people are taking the quiz?
Over 1 million people or so take the quiz every year, so it's quite a popular internet tool, and many people like it. At the same time, you also understand it's psychologically a little bit limited, because what do you do at the end if you say, okay, if everybody lives like me, it takes 7 planets, and then people are stopped in their tracks and say, oh my God, it's impossible or whatever, this is really negative. And so I think what it's still lacking, and that's what we're thinking about for if we have the opportunity to do a next generation of such a quiz, to make it more engaging and help people see what does it mean for their lives. And I think key is not just to tell them, what do we have to do less of? It's not about reducing your footprint primarily. It's primarily, I think, to secure our quality of life. How can we have the best lives possible? And then we have to recognize there's a budget constraint. So how to see a possible way of living that may be less resource intensive, but generates at least as good of a life as we have right now. An interesting comparison right now, just if you look at nations, in Italy, they use about 2.5 times less footprint per person than in the United States, and they're not suffering. So just there are many ways how we can organize our lives that may be of very high quality of life with significantly reduced resource consumption, and that's really the challenge of the 21st century, that we recognize the planet is limited, we want to have great lives, and the research question really is for young researchers or for engineers or for professionals, how can we provide it? How can we provide great lives on significantly lower resource throughput.
What kind of choices is Italy making that America is not?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of two set of choices. One is individual choices, and the other one are just systems choices that then lock us into certain consumption patterns. And I would say system choices, let's say urban design, the way our cities are organized, may influence 70 to 80% of our overall footprint. Of course, that then overlays with behavior. But for instance, in Italy, if you live in a dense city where you can walk to work and you don't need to have a car to get around, and there are markets where you can buy from the neighboring farms, etc., just all these aspects are far less resource intensive. If you live in a very low density situation, let's say in Houston, and then in a suburb in Houston, and then you have to drive anywhere you want to go, and you have to drive your kids to school, you have to drive to get a little bit of milk, etc., then even though that's not necessarily the highest part, highest quality of life at that moment, that when you have to drive around, it just, there's no other choice, and so it forces you to have relatively large footprints for your kind of life. So I think city structure, the way they are organized and how close amenities are and how far you have to go to work and if you have to travel a lot, these are all aspects that jack up your footprint.
In some of the different articles and interviews you've done, you talk about ecological debt. Can you explain what this is?
I mean, ecological assets are not that different from financial assets. We can use the income from the assets more rapidly than the assets replenish. And so that would be called deficit spending in government, for example, or individually. If we spend more than what we earn, we run a deficit individually as our household. And as the deficit accumulates, that becomes a debt. Same thing for nature. So if we continuously exceed what nature can regenerate, we accumulate a debt. And that manifests in nature in ways like deforestation is one possibility, or groundwater depletion, or fisheries collapses, or CO2 accumulation in the atmosphere, all manifestations of ecological debt.
So what does this show us about where we're headed?
I mean, where we're headed depends on our choices today. It's not, the future's up to up to us to a large extent. We can look at what happens if we just continue on the same track. Also, I would say the demographic challenge is a big one. I mean, we don't have to grow to 9 billion people, and I think that can be turned around most effectively by investing heavily into women across the world. We see that when women have more access to education and political choices and can be more actively integrated in the economic and political life of countries, they most likely have much lower reproduction rates, have smaller families. And that leads to better educated children often, leads to more economic well-being, better health profiles, because people have better access to health care and understand better medical possibilities. So it's a big win for all people involved. At the same time, leads to a much lower population, and everybody will win. The environment will win, women will win, their children will win, families will win, and everybody will live better.
I'm wondering how the ecological footprint compares to the carbon footprint.
Yeah, I think now with climate change has received far more attention now than it has in the year ago, which we enormously welcome, obviously. And so the carbon footprint is a big part of the overall footprint for humanity, roughly. Carbon footprint is about half of the overall demand on the biosphere, we would say, from our assessments. So the carbon footprint is a very significant piece. What we need to understand as well is that if you just look at carbon footprints, there may be some severe spillovers into other areas that we may be blind to if we don't look at the whole footprint. That's particularly manifest if you look at biofuels. Biofuels could provide great solutions, but also if the wrong ones are chosen, actually our footprint may increase. I mean, one example is just the demand on soy production or for example, palm oil for biodiesel can have severe biodiversity effects, let's say in Brazil or in Malaysia and in Indonesia, and needs to be more carefully looked at. Otherwise, we just make the problems bigger somewhere else.
So what would it look like in America if we adopted the footprint?
I think one of our goals would be that by having ecological footprint measures, government officials would have as sleepless nights over ecological deficits as they have now over unemployment rates or sluggish growth or balance of trade deficits, etc., that we start to recognize that ecological bankruptcy may be as severe, if not even more severe, than financial bankruptcy, that we need to manage our ecological assets at least as carefully as our financial assets. So that's why we think having solid, good measures that people understand the implications of can be catalysts for making different infrastructure choices. Now, how would that manifest once we recognize that ecological deficits are a threat to us, are a risk, an understood risk? We will start to invest much more heavily, let's say, in renewable energy options, like, let's say, wind power. We will make our infrastructure less dependable on car transportation and flying, probably focusing more on other ways of communicating electronically. We'll be reshaping our house or shelter industry, construction industry, towards building and restoring houses that are far more energy efficient. Houses essentially could be carbon neutral if they're built well.
Well, thank you for speaking with me today.
Yeah, I'm thrilled and I'm glad you're doing this. It's wonderful, and I congratulate all your staff and your listeners to taking on these important topics. That's fantastic.
That was Matis Bakker-Nagel of the Global Footprint Network speaking with Lindsay Patterson. This has been an Earth and Sky presentation.
We're at earthsky.org.